Yo, what's the deal, baby? This your boy, Uncle Luke, formerly of the 2 Live Crew. You are listening to Pass It Down with Mike Silver and Natalie Silver. Natalie is the most beautiful young lady in this deal right here. Mike doesn't look so good, even though they're dad and daughter. It's the big show, baby.
Well, we are so excited because we have a brother-sister team joining us, and I'll introduce them separately. Brandi Chastain is a member of the National Soccer Hall of Fame, icon, member of the all-time U.S. Women's National Team, 11, 2 World Cup titles, 2 Olympic golds and a silver, a voluntary assistant at Santa Clara, one of the great athletic programs in the country, and the head coach at Bellarmine Prep in San Jose, her hometown. And one of the most iconic photos in sports history is of her famously celebrating the 1999 World Cup title, Brandi Chastain. And I don't even know how to talk about her brother other than to say Chad is the originator of Golf All 50, which we'll get to, highly successful club coach, FC United up in Illinois, fantastic club there. He's a huge reason why I try to avoid covering the Chicago Bears because when we get together, it's there's a lot of wear and tear on us and those around us. And and he's the guy who emboldened me to start eating avocados whole, which we'll also get to. But Brandi and Chad, thank you guys so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I think you missed one part on Chad's bio, which is to say is the better of the athletes in our family.
Wow.
I mean, clearly, but let's not go overboard right off the bat.
And the more handsome of the two.
Sure. My load has been blown, Silver. Looks like I'm out of the conversation already. I'm already done. I've hit the ceiling.
He is also humble. Like, that's the crazy thing. He is, his humility, because before we actually clicked record, Chad, you already had a line that I thought was instructive. So why don't you share that before now?
No. We were discussing before we went live, Brandi, about how, you know, COVID has kind of changed the fabric of our sport and all sports, and in particular the youth aspect of which we're both involved in. And I just had mentioned that it's been nice to kind of get away from our home and visit family that we see out here in Minneapolis, which is where my wife's family is, and how it's nice for Aaron to take an edge off, to have a glass of wine with her father-in-law. And instead of having to monitor what I drink at home, which every time I get to, you know, one finger before the bottom of the glass, I have to make sure it's refilled. And, you know, you got to make sure you tell your bartenders that, you know, if you're not set to refill my glass, then you're going to lose my tip at the end of the night. But, you know,
what was the line about charm, though?
I said, you know, if you don't have any charm, you know, at a bar, if you don't have charm and you're a patron and you're a bit of an asshole, you know, you have to manage the bartender. You got to know where you stand.
Well, hey, this is again where Chad, I think, is the better of the Chastains, in that I feel like I'm a people person. Chad dominates. He's like a Hall of Famer in the people category. He gets this from our mom. She was a woman who could step inside a room and have, you know, 100 best friends in a minute's moment. So Chad is definitely outstanding in that capacity.
And I was so lucky to get to meet your mom. And actually, that was the first moment I met Chad. I was hanging out, Brandi, with you at your place, watching, I think, Bundesliga and talking about the WSA, probably early 2000s. And your mom was, I think, making me lunch. I mean, nice. Nicest human ever. And Chad kind of walks in and, you know, says hi, and we're talking, and he's slicing up this big fat avocado. And I'm like, oh, well, interesting. I wonder what he's going to make. And he kind of pops the pit out, grabs a tablespoon, walks in and just starts scooping the avocado into his mouth. And I, like, Brandy, you were probably talking about women's empowerment and something really important. And I didn't hear a word because I was just mesmerized. And then he takes the second half and starts doing it. And I'm like an avocado fanatic. Like I've just been obsessed my whole life. And I'd be like, oh my God, you had the balls to actually just eat a whole avocado with a spoon. So it kind of really freed me up. In addition to making me the president of the Chad Chastain fan club for life, it freed me up to like, really.
Yeah, no, it definitely went hand in hand with women's empowerment. Yeah. Multiple parties being freed,
for sure. Thank you, Natalie. Thank you. it seems that the males in my family were into just eating fruits and vegetables whole. Like my dad would do that with a tomato. So I don't know. They're wow. interesting like that.
This is what he would do. Roger would cut up a red onion. And he'd be out back grilling and he would slice a red onion like you'd think you'd slice it thinly so you could put it on a salad or whatever you do. He would slice it in wedges and eat the red onion in wedges.
Yeah. They're interesting.
Yeah. Wow. That's strong.
But yeah, he was a man that grew up, Silver, with his father who they didn't necessarily farm, but he would sell as a kid. My dad as a kid would sell, you know, fruits and veggies on the corner in their area. And that's what he kind of did in the summer. You know, so he grew up with the best of the vegetables in Central California. So
that's funny because in Santa Monica, my friend and I would climb into the neighbor's yard illegally, steal avocados from their tree, and then undercut the price at Safeway and sell them outside Safeway so we could have money to, when we couldn't sneak into the movie theater, we could then pay. And that was charming when we were like, you know, 8 and 9. But my buddy Dan, who I know you've met, and my buddy Greg, who I know you know, unfortunately for you, they turned it into like an enterprise in high school when it became Grand Theft Avocado. But I digress anyway.
Ooh, that could be the next EA Sports.
That would be healthy.
It might have to turn to that if games can't be played, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Just like selling fruit stands and everyone's back here.
I could get a consulting deal for sure on that.
Oh my God. So is this the same grandpa who would pay you $1 for every goal and $1.50 for every assist?
No, it's the grandfather we were talking about was our dad's dad. The genius who got me to appreciate giving the ball to somebody else, which I'd rarely like to do, was my mom's father.
It's so brilliant because that's how I justified my idiotic soccer dad, sports dad sensibilities, is that I cheered the assist harder than the goal. And so, and when I'd hear stories of people paying, that was always my first question. Are you paying them for an assist too? And
yeah.
And then my daughter set a single season assist record in field hockey at her high school. And I felt so nice. Proud.
Well, bravo.
Thank you.
Bravo.
I'm famous. So, Brandy, you had your grandfather kind of like guiding you and leading you and inspiring you. But like when I was coming up in soccer, I had you and I had Foudy and I had all these dope, famous soccer players kind of guiding me. And I think it gave me some swag on the field and it definitely impacted me as a player and as a person, which was awesome. But, when you were coming up and learning how to play and falling in love with the game, what was it like for you?
Well, obviously it was much different for me because I was actually just telling this story to someone yesterday about, you know, when I was, let's say in my early formative years, you know, those 10, 11, 12, 13 years, there was not even a national team. So, you know, I was watching the one soccer program a week, soccer made in Germany. Luckily, my parents recognized that, you know, I was falling in love with soccer. And so we got season tickets to the San Jose Earthquakes. And so I became a fan of watching, you know, the earthquakes and George Best. That became the person who really caught my eye. And obviously he was a world famous player and probably slightly past his prime when he got to the earthquakes. But as soccer went, he just mesmerized me. And so every time I went, I have to tell you, this is a funny story. This is a brother sister story here. So we're at San Jose State, where Spartan Stadium is and where the earthquakes played in the early years. And my brother was, you know, he wasn't a sit down on the bleacher kind of guy, right? As soon as we got into the stadium, it was like, you know, back then kids were just running around the stadium and they had a dirt berm on the backside of the stadium where the bleachers were, and the kids would like slide down it and run back up. I was transfixed by the players on the field. And so I never moved from my seat, but my mom would always be like, "Brandy, where's your brother?" I'm like, I have no idea where he is. Like, I don't know. I'm watching the game. She's like, "Find him." And I'm like, "Wow, but the game is going on, right?" And next thing you know, I'm like scanning around. I'm looking through the crowd. Where's my brother? On the bench of the of the visiting team. just sitting there as if he belonged on the team. Like he was unbelievable, like how he would get himself into these unbelievable situations. And I'm like, "Mom, there he is. He's over right over there." She's like, "Where?" I'm like, "On the bench of the other team." She's like, "Roger, go and get that."
Well, to my defense, Mike and Natalie, the security back then was like Swiss cheese. You literally walked down to the bottom row and then walked through a gate that was right by the bench. Like there was zero security. I mean, I could have run onto the field and no one.
The whole point is exactly how people really should live, which is fearless, right? You should be, you shouldn't be afraid to try something. And Chad was just absolutely unafraid to just walk into that situation and as if he belonged. And then everybody probably looked at him like, "Oh, obviously he belongs, because why would he be here?" So he could stay.
This is exactly what he does now, by the way. It's like,
mind you, I was seven years old, maybe 10 at the very oldest.
Yeah. And Natalie, just George Best. So I grew up in LA. I think I played the second year that AYSO existed in my neighborhood. Obviously there were no girls teams back then, in AYSO at least. And George Best was on the Cosmos, I think, or the
Earthquakes.
What was the LA team? Aztecs. He was on the LA Aztecs for a minute, I think. And so I saw him play. They played like an exhibition. Pelé came and played against them or something. And but George Best had the personality of Chad, according to reports, and loved to socialize and had the flair of Brandy, you know, in terms of his actual game, like an incredibly skilled player. So I like Brandy, like when Brandy got to Cal and I was there, she was already kind of a legend in terms of what she could do with the ball. You know, you'd hear all these stories like, "Oh my God, she scored like on a bicycle kick." You know, Chad, like, can you give us some perspective on how good she was, how early?
Well, you know, it's a testament to Brandy in her, I think just her dedication and desire to, you know, find something early in life and then stick with it. And not only stick with it, but become one of the best players in the world. She didn't have, until she was a little bit older, she didn't have really a high level of female competition. So Brandy played and was asked to play even with my teams growing up. But, you know, I think when I first realized that it was the next level was I was playing, and I was a little older. We were still a little bit older at the time, but I was playing, trying to make one of the kind of semi-pro indoor teams. And it was a San Jose Grizzlies team. And they played at I think they played maybe at the Cal Palace early on. I don't even know. Maybe it was in somewhere. You might remember, Brandy, where they played. Eventually, I think they played at the Shark Tank, but, early on in the tryout process, And only reason I think the only reason I got a tryout is I was playing with a men's team in the area that had a lot of high profile Bay Area players on the team to begin with. And Bob McNabb, who was a British gentleman who had played for Arsenal and had gone through the.
I'm sure this is a great story. Did I lose you?
Yeah,
all?
I'm not hearing them either.
Well, listen. I know, he's probably still talking, so it's normal.
Chad, so, if you can hear us. Yeah, now we can hear you.
Sorry. I don't know where I was left off.
So you said Bob McNabb. You were talking about Bob McNabb who played for Arsenal.
Yeah. So Bob McNabb said, "Okay, you guys go here. Chad, you go there." And he put me kind of in the back where I eventually became a back. I was trying to be a forward, and I was not technical enough. And I had decent size and decent speed, so he said, "Okay, play in the back." So we went through the rigors of it, and I'm in this drill and trying to make this team. And I was above; I was out of my pay grade for sure with the players that were around me. And I got skinned by somebody, and in his English accent said, "Yeah, fucking Chastain, do we need to get your sister out here?" and I went. That's when I realized, holy shit. Brandy's the real deal. and I am not in this sport. I mean, I was good and but one thing, and I think Brandy can attest to this, I was a pretty good athlete in almost every sport. I could do every sport pretty well. I just wasn't excellent in any one of them until probably recently in golf, but that's about it.
Well, yeah, I think, and I said this at the beginning, you know, I think Chad is potentially I think he is the better athlete. All around, without a doubt. I mean, I feel like I was skillful in a lot of sports and played all sports growing up as a young player, and didn't actually specialize in soccer until I was a senior in high school.
Wow.
But Chad could do anything. I remember growing up, we'd go to the local high school pool during the summer, and he would be doing, you know, double backflips off of the 3-meter board at the pool, or, you know, he was just always so physically aware of himself, you know, but he was a small guy growing up. So nobody really paid him any attention until he grew into this, you know, 6'3" behemoth of a person. And unfortunately for him, I think the timing was not great in that way. And there wasn't anybody. This is a story, I think, for anybody who's listening, when they're looking at someone as a coach or a mentor, is that I don't think anybody took enough time to realize what he could be. And so I would say that I hope I'm a better coach for having my brother in my life, because I can look at kids and think, look, they may be here right now, but in 2 years' time, that kid is going to be special. Nobody did that for him.
That's a great point, because I've always been on a late bloomer tirade. You know, that's one problem, as having gone through it as a sports parent now, you know, we want them to specialize, and we want to identify the good players and put them on the good teams early. And we care about winning. This is in the US, right? Developmentally. Yeah. And then, you know, we've kind of slotted even into college recruiting. And I'm sure, you know, some are better than others. Like, I feel like Jerry probably has the best sense of any coach out there as to who will actually translate. But, you know, you have to start early. And so these kids are getting recruited early on in, you know, when they're 14, 15, and the late bloomers are often not accounted for in that system.
Yeah, absolutely. But the good thing is we have gone back to the old rules of not recruiting 11 and 12 year old kids to college. So, you know, now it's, you know, back to this concept where you're going to be a junior in high school, and you'll take your official visits, and you'll go through the proper process of, you know, doing the research, and the players will be more mature. And so I think ultimately at the end of the day, what everybody's finding out is that, you know, it's easy to pick the kids who are the most physically capable, the faster or the stronger kid. But, you know, honestly, from the time they're like that freshman in high school till they leave college, that's 8 years. So, you know, if you're a good coach, what you should care about is the character and the coachability of the young person, because, you know, you can't change physiology that much. You know, it's like the percentage point is so low, but if they have good character, they can learn and they can contribute and they can really make a difference. So I think that is that's where the best coaches do their work, right? They find those kids that they're not just capable, but they're also, you know, physically, they're mentally, they just have great character and great personalities and team first concepts, you know, that those are the ones that you enjoy coaching those kids.
So when you were coming up and having to play with boys or, you know, just, I don't even know, you know, how many club teams there were back then in the Bay Area, but like, do you remember the moment where you kind of figured out like, whoa, I might be so good at this that there's a higher level?
Oh, you know, Mike, I honestly think that I love sports so much that I just, the sense of gratitude that I got every time, or the reward I got intrinsically from just going out there and running around and playing and competing, was like something that filled me up so much that I rarely thought about that. But that was, again, I honestly believe it's because I didn't have that thing, you know, that final objective, which was like the national team to look to. And I think I knew I was good from the beginning. Soccer just came relatively easy to me for who knows what reason, but I did spend an increment. I mean, I spent a huge amount of time kicking the ball against the wall. I would take my soccer ball down to the wall. I have a great picture of Chad and I in a terrible looking early 80s, sweatpants tucked into the socks, t-shirts tucked in, you know, high waisted pants, and we're juggling our soccer balls out on the front lawn. But I spent a lot of time with the ball and I liked it. And I just never thought, hey, I'm going to make this my career. I just thought the more I did it, the more I liked it and the better I got. And so it, for me, luckily the timing was just right. And I could be a part of the national team programming, you know, as a youth national team member who made a team and then got my name on a piece of paper. We didn't even play international games. I probably would have had 5,000, you know, international games under my belt.
Yeah. She only has 192, yeah. Paltry 192.
So it was different. It was different then. And I feel that it definitely influences the way parents and kids make decisions about what they're doing. But I try to encourage all the kids to find the things that they're passionate about. You know, that could be inside of sports. It could be outside of sports. Because when you do, you find that the effort you put into doing that thing is fairly minimal. But in terms of like having to talk yourself into doing it. And then the rewards are really big. You know, you get so much out of it that, you know, it turned out perfect for me. But, you know, I think when you have to push something so hard, it's not quite as maybe satisfying at the end.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that you mentioned juggling, because I remember maybe the only time I've met Chad, or one of the only times I've met Chad, we were all out to dinner and Chad was like, "You want to get better at soccer?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Okay, this is what you have to do." And I'm like, "What?" And he's like, "You just have to juggle every day, every day."
Yeah.
Yeah, with a flat, like semi-flat ball inside barefoot and outside full ball, juggle every day. And so I did, and I got okay at it. But my dad has a funny story.
Well, so when Natalie was 16, you know this as a parent, Brandy, and you will soon experience it again, and Chad will experience it. And that is the first time you put your kid behind a wheel of an automobile is
never. Terrifying. That will be never.
Terrifying, like literally, that's the word I would use. And so Natalie had her permit, and again, this is a kid who probably had a little too much swag, kind of like, as she correctly said, in soccer, you know, you taking her into Cyber Race team meetings and having her kick the ball with Cece and Katya, you know, she carried herself for this quiet, shy little girl with like a lot of arrogance as a young soccer player. And I think she did that as a young driver. And so she finally gets her license and
this is her permit.
She's only driven like once or twice, and she ends up going into this shopping area where we live with kind of rows of parking that, you know, face each other diagonally. And she comes into a space, this is with Leslie in the car, a little hot, tries to slam on the brakes, but instead slams on the gas, hits that is the last remaining car at the time that has a stick shift and is in neutral with no parking brake. And that car goes and hits a third car. So she comes home and, you know, Leslie thinks I'm going to be like super upset. Natalie is just shaken.
You were so cool, though.
And I was cool. I was just, you know, I was glad you're okay. And like, whatever, we'll throw money at the problem. That's pretty much my approach to adulthood at this point. And so, you know, but it definitely was shook Natalie up. So we're lying in bed that night and Leslie says, how can a kid who can juggle a soccer ball hundreds of times without it touching the ground not know the fucking difference between a gas pedal and a brake?
Well, again, practice, right?
Practice. By the way, so Chad, there's a story I actually wanted to tell about you. There's so many, but I thought I'd take this opportunity because I don't think Brandy knows it. So you talk about Chad being good at every sport. Brandy, we have this tradition that my friends and I started in college in 1983 before the Cal-Stanford game, the big game. We played the little game, which is a tackle optional, mostly touch football game where there might be beers in the huddle and teams kind of developed on traditional lines. And, you know, it's a big to do. We usually play it the day before the Cal Stanford game. So I kind of brought Chad one year, not only to that, but the entire big game weekend, which became a recurring theme. So Chad plays in little game, scores the winning touchdown and wins MVP. And there is an MVP, dominates the game. Then the Friday night is like, my friends are huge partiers and Chad is the star of that too, and becomes a legend.
Well, hold on. I never won Mr. Shitty, just so you know.
You did not win Mr. Shitty, which is given at the end of the weekend, but it's because you're not angry enough. Mr. Shitty kind of has to be a little angry too. But Chad, like, so my friends are now in love with him. He's the star of Friday night. And we reconvene Saturday, and it's 2004. Cal's having this amazing season. It's I'm going to tell you the date. It was November 20th, 2004. And Cal's in the process of playing Stanford with Marshawn Lynch and Aaron Rodgers. It's a great day, beautiful day in Berkeley. And it's kind of a low moment early in the game where not much is going on. And Chad's cell phone rings. And it was probably you, Brandy, calling from Chapel Hill. And he starts getting unbelievably excited and just freaking out. And what had happened was he had gotten news that Santa Clara had upset North Carolina, you know, the behemoth at their own stadium in the third round of the NCAA tournament on a golden goal. And he was understandably thrilled. You know, his future wife, Erin, was an assistant on the team. Is that girlfriend? His sister was a volunteer assistant. You know, his brother-in-law is the head coach. I mean, it's a big, big moment. It part of a long storied history of Santa Clara soccer. And he's just so happy. And he keeps just talking about it. And I, you know, Natalie, how am I on big game Saturday? Like, kind of locked
up. A little tense.
Yeah.
Super tense.
And he keeps talking about it. And I'm happy. Like, I'm like, go Broncos.
Well, no, because Cal is up.
Well, yeah, Cal is up. Right, yeah. Thank God.
Right.
But he keeps talking about it. And I'm just like, yeah. And finally he goes, do you think they'll put it up? And I go, what? Huh? And he goes, do you think they'll put it up on the scoreboard? And I'm like, huh? And he's like, are they going to put the score on the scoreboard? And finally, I'm like, no, Chad, they're not going to put the third round Santa Clara, North Carolina women's soccer score on the scoreboard at Memorial Stadium during the game.
Well, why not?
Right. And then, by the way, the next year at Stanford, we win again. Chad has a similarly huge weekend. And at that point, we had a tradition where after Cal beat Stanford, which that was a good decade for us, I would call your good friend, Julie Foudy, and former national team teammate who, how did I introduce her to you, Natalie?
You told me, you're like, okay, this is Julie. And I want you to know that she went to Stanford, but she's okay. We like her. We like her. I was so scared. And then she like had me sit on her lap for a whole game. And I was like, wait, she's so nice.
She's one of the good ones.
Yeah.
So we call Foudy from a bar. We're, you know, all my drunken college friends were so happy. And of course, Chad's going to get in on that. But the best thing is that Chad taunted her for 40 minutes straight while impersonating a Scottish football announcer. Never breaking character. In fact, Foudy probably doesn't even know. Like, you never broke character once.
I didn't mention that he also used to do that to me while we were working. He would call me in character of multiple different accents, and I'd pick up the phone. We both worked at IBM in the 80s, and he would just go on for minutes at a time, and I'm like, who is this person? Like, and then he would ultimately give me a laugh, and I'd be like, go back to work. You know, like, stop bugging me. But oh yeah, he's quite good. He's a character.
Chad, remember that night we were out and someone thought you were Colin Farrell, and you just did like hours of Colin Farrell, like never breaking character once.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Jeez. You know, we spent a good amount of time, and those were the days when you know, like you said, Silver, Cal was obviously the better team and had you know, the nights were good post big game because, you know, Cal usually got a W
and that means that the day after was really bad, right?
Yeah. but if you won, you didn't care. You felt good about it.
Right.
You felt good about feeling bad.
Yes.
Right. Mike and I would inevitably end up at like some burrito joint down in like the halls somewhere in Berkeley, just putting back, you know, four big burritos.
we do have the same exact food tastes, including Gibson's in Chicago, which I mean, that's a whole other. I don't know.
I want to hear.
Is Natalie ready for the, like, Brandy, you don't know the story.
I don't know if I'm ready for it, let alone your daughter.
I don't know if Gibson's is ready. So Gibson's is one of the great steakhouses. I used to go there with Dennis Rodman a lot in the 90s in Chicago. And every time I go to that great city, the first thing I do is I call Chad and say, where are you? Let's go. And then we gather a crew including a former previous podcast guest, Dr. Gregory Hoon. Has been in on some of those, now curing COVID. So this was a surprise visit though, because the Packers I had covered a Packers playoff game in Green Bay, and I was with my cohort, Jeff Darlington, who's now with ESPN and is kind of like the Chad of NFL reporters.
Yeah, I've never gone out with Chad, but I've gone out with Jeff.
Yeah, that's a good match. And we ended up in Chicago. I don't know how. Like, we covered a Packer game. We got in the car. We drove to Chicago. It's like a Monday. And we kind of had a free day. I didn't have to fly home till that night. So we're like, oh, what should we do? Maybe we should day drink excessively. And we end up at Gibson's, and it's Chad, our friend Rachel, our friend Rebecca Harlow, who at the time I think worked at NFL Network, and then a couple other people. So we had a group of about seven, and they were sure happy to see us in the bar area starting at about 11:30 a.m. with the Moscow Mules and the loudness and the, you know, all the charm Chad talked about. And then, okay, so Gibson's has framed photos everywhere, on the wall, down in the bathroom area, down the staircase, just framed photos of various celebrities who have frequented the joint, and somehow we got the idea that maybe there should be a photo of us.
awesome.
So Jeff Darlington takes a photo, makes it black and white on his iPhone, disappears, goes to a Kinko's, prints it out, and then Chad.
You haven't heard yeah, get ready.
All right, Chad, are you the one who replaced the actual? How did that happen? I can't remember.
I don't recall. I know it wasn't me.
Maybe.
I do remember in the restaurant itself, the bar area is down on the first floor. The restroom is upstairs, so you have to go up a stairwell, kind of around a corner, and you're by yourself as you're going up this area. So periodically, and I might have taken it off. it was a long day, and you know there was a picture of, some B-lister that got up there somehow. So we
as opposed to us who had signed, by the way, we autographed the photo, all of us.
Of course.
So it gets on the wall for I don't know how long it was up there, but we found out going forward that we went and it was gone, right, Silver? Didn't we go, yeah, didn't we go back and it was gone?
So someone went back a month later and it was gone. Now, in fairness to Gibson's, it wasn't the most well-executed ending in that I think we broke the glass. I think there was already broken glass involved, but I just remember that moment where we all kind of one by one went over and saw that our photo resided on the walls with, you know, Bill Murray and, you know, the legends who have frequented Gibson. I do have photographic evidence of this.
I would love to see that.
In my
phone. It was probably a Browns fan who took it down, or a Raiders fan.
Yeah, that was good.
Patriots.
I always had to clear my schedule when Mike came to town with Aaron. I had to, you know, I had to put in good deeds throughout the day to sneak away for the big night of the Gibson's meal. Well,
One time I really needed Chad. So what I did is it was a necessary and smart move. I actually went over to the house first because I had been up by the Bears.
You say that like you were Maverick and Iceman. You know, yes. What was it? Goose.
Yeah, it was a great analogy. So I went over. We sat in the back. I drank wine with Aaron. I played with the girls for an hour. Like, it was great. Yeah. I loved it. It was fun. But like, I built up so much goodwill, I think, with your sister-in-law, Brandy, that the next day when Chad couldn't even pull a lawnmower or whatever he was trying to do, I was only reviled on a 7 on a scale of 10.
But the groundwork was laid in that, you know, you schmooze Aaron for a little bit. She's like, yeah, go do whatever.
Well, you know, coaches.
You, what's the quote about the charm? If you don't turn on the charm,
yeah. If you don't, if you don't use charm,
I wish I remembered what I said.
It was great.
Listen, I'm on vacation here. I'm just enjoying my time. I'm got too much downtime. I can't remember.
Well, here's the reality. He doesn't have to turn it on or off. It just always exists.
Oh.
So he's fortunate.
So Brandy, was Chad sure. in 99 when you guys went on that incredible ride in the U.S. to the World Cup Championship? Was Chad hanging out with the friends and family?
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at a picture right now of Chad, my mom, my mom's best friend, Kathleen, and our older son, Cameron, outside of the Rose Bowl. I'm going to take a picture and I'm going to, as soon as I can get it, one that's not too glaring. Yeah. I'm going to send it to you guys.
Excellent. Well, I will say this, Silver. I went to the opening game of the round robin play in at MetLife Stadium. Was it MetLife Stadium back?
It was Giants Stadium. Same place, though. Yeah.
And this goes to show how long ago this was. NSYNC opened the game. NSYNC did like a 15-minute concert before the first.
God, we missed all the cool stuff.
So I didn't travel to all the games, but I went to that one. I went back home. Obviously, I was there for the semifinal and the final. But unbelievable time of our lives.
So Chad definitely was hanging around. Chad got along with, of course, Chad got along with all the girls.
Anyone in particular?
No, all of them. They all loved him.
Chad.
They all loved him.
Yeah, that's a side conversation.
Yeah. They all loved him. No, because he, again, it's just a charm thing. He's just a great dude, you know? He's a great guy and he's fun to be around. And he wins the award, in my opinion, for father of the universe, because he does such a great job with his daughters, and he's definitely a girl dad.
I mean, you guys have nieces and nephews. Let's switch it up. Brandy, why don't you talk about your nieces and what do you see so far? Competitiveness, personal charm. What brightens your mood when you think about Hopper and Brooklyn?
I'm bugging my brother all the time. Please send me pictures. Please send me pictures. Here's the area that Chad needs work. He sucks at sending me things. I'll tell you that right now. Totally sucks. He says he will and he doesn't. So Chad, I'm calling you out on this podcast right now on that. But this morning, Erin, his wife, sent me pictures of their new puppy and Harper and Brooklyn. And Brooklyn, they're both beautiful girls. They're both very unique. They look, you know, they're incredibly different from each other. Harper looks just like my mom. And every time I look at her, I just like, my heart melts because it just reminds me of my mom, who I loved absolutely dearly and miss her all the time. So I'm very grateful for Harper, and she's left-handed like my mom. So, you know, she's a firecracker right now. She's starting to get, her independence, I think. And she's, you know, she's starting to do the thing that kids do when parents tell you what to do. And she's like, she thinks she either knows it all or it can do it better. And so sometimes that, you know, that's a problem. But I love that she's kind of got this gusto. And then the picture of Brooklyn, she's standing by her bike with her red, white, and blue on, and she's got her hand on her hip and kind of one leg out. And I'm thinking, oh my God, she is so sassy. And so she is going to be a handful. Like, she is very competitive, very, you know, wants to be in the middle of it all. So
not going to be, she already is a handful.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. So, but I love them. They're awesome. And I miss that they're so far away from me. But I'm glad that we have technology so we can stay close together.
And
I'll tell you, Mike, and sometimes, like, I think they're so cute because they want to talk to me and they FaceTime me, but sometimes they forget that they're in Chicago and I'm in California. So they FaceTime me at my grandfather, who taught me giving is better than receiving. Yeah. When I was at Cal, Mike, you could probably appreciate this because, unlike now where everybody has a cell phone and you can put your cell phone right next to your bed, we had phones in our rooms, but they were on cords.
Yep.
So my grandfather would call before 7 a.m. in the morning and just to say hello. And I would tell him, like, I love hearing from you and I want you to call me every day, but I have a roommate and she doesn't go to bed until after 3 o'clock because she's a night owl and you can't call at like 6:45 in the morning and just to say hello. So just wait and call me later. But his girls are great. I think they're going to go on to do amazing things because they're supported to be courageous and they have a dad they might even start a band, you know, a band or a dance troupe or something. Cause Chad is like the boy band, king, and they all sing songs in the car. And aww. So they're going to be, they'll be outgoing. They'll be women who can take charge. And I really look forward to them through all their stages. And then you can send them to me, Chad, anytime if they get out of line. You can send them and they can stay with me, which I'm sure they won't.
Because Brandy is Brandy's a grandma.
I've just gone to go get a tissue. Hold on.
we won't take that out of context. And so Natalie, Jaden is now 14?
He's 14. He's 14.
Oh my gosh! So you,
yeah,
you remember, guess what? You remember that beautiful little boy?
Absolutely.
He is 14, and I'm curious if Uncle Chad has, you know, let him drive the tractor yet or something nefarious.
No, you know, Jaden, I've not, because I live so far away. But when we do get together, Jaden is such a great kid. He is the smartest 21-year-old I know, and he's 14 years old. He is ahead of the game as far as his ability to know his place, be, you know, he's forward thinking. He has answers to questions that I'd have to get on the internet for. He's just very bright. He loves to game, and he loves to read, and he loves music. He's an outstanding pianist, and we see oftentimes, Brandy, when we're on FaceTime with them, he'll give us a recital of what he'd been working on. He's a talented kid. He's Brandy and Jerry kind of wrapped up in one, and it's interesting because when you try to argue with any one of the three of them, Jerry is the calm, you know, he's the calibrated, he is the numbers guy, and then he'll spit out his answer. Brandy's the, with me anyway, Brandy's the firecracker and the, you know, let's get to the end of the conversation this minute. And Jaden kind of is a little bit of both, and it's kind of fun to see him grow. But Brandy's elder son, who is her stepson, Cameron, was who because I lived in the area, and I remember letting him know early on in high school, his high school years, I said, hey, if there's anything you need to talk about or want to talk about, and you feel like it's difficult to go to your parents about, or Brandy, you know, your stepmom or Jerry, or, you know, about, feel free to come to me. And, you know, and Cameron and I had some good conversations. So, you know, they're two good kids, and Cameron has gone on to now have his own family, and, also a Santa Clara grad, and is well on his way to being a great dad, and Jaden is just a good kid. He's just a good overall kid. So it's,
well, I'm going to tell you something, Mike.
Jaden and my girls have each other.
Yeah, they love each other. Jaden loves his cousins. So Jaden is 14, and he will be going to Bellarmine next year.
Nice.
And I'm praying for school being back in session for everybody around the country, so that our kids can, you know, not just enjoy being together, but, you know, not lose connection with friends. But he has decided that he wants to play football.
Oh,
and not my football.
Whoa.
Not my football. And of course I'm thinking, you know, Jaden's, I love Jaden, but he's the kind of guy who like will stub his toe and it's like nearly the end of the the world. And I'm thinking to myself, it is going to be interesting to see how he handles the tackling or the, you know, just the physical nature of football, but he is determined. And luckily they're going to start summer camp for football on Monday. So it's going to be trial by fire. We'll see how it goes.
What position is he looking to play?
Well, I was trying to get him to be in the least contact area of the wide receiver type.
Kicker.
And he said,
kicker's good.
And then he said, no, he wants to be Michael Strahan.
He wants to be Michael Strahan. See, it's interesting. Like with as embedded as I am into football with both of my boys, my attitude was if they really, really, really want to play, then maybe I'm cool with it. I don't know how Leslie would have been, but I certainly wasn't like encouraging it. I was kind of like, hey, basketball's awesome, Greg, or like, hey, Robbie, soccer, you know. So, I hope for your sake that he has a great experience. And it is funny with Michael Strahan, because when I got my concussion at Super Bowl 45, which is a whole other story, where I slipped on the ice and landed on my head, and it was a whole fiasco. And I was at this party, and Strahan was there, and I was, you know, I had some symptoms, and I was trying to figure out what to do, and it was hard getting to a hospital because the roads were all messed up, and I was I asked Michael because I figured, you know, he played 15 years and he surprised me. He said, hey, man, you know, Natasha Richardson had just died in a fall on a Bunny Hill skiing. He said, and don't screw around. He's like, go to the hospital. Just don't. And I said, really? And I said, well, what did you do when you got a concussion? And he goes, I never got one. I only gave them. And I'm like, even in my, like, you know, like loopy state, I was like, okay, that's fine.
Well, my head is like spinning, but we should probably like talk about soccer a little bit. Maybe in part two, we can get to that. What do you think?
I also want to hear some more Chad Chastain stories.
There are never enough, I promise.